What we're talking about tonight is mostly Daniel 12, but actually we're going to take a run at it from Daniel 11. The chart I've got up on the wall, and for anybody out in streaming land who wants it, I would be happy to email it to you, is a chart of times. One of the things that's going to be a big deal in Daniel is the idea of time, when what happens and when what's going to happen and that kind of thing. And the Persian way of doing that is in sevens. Time times and a half a time is 3.5 years. 3.5 years translates into 1260 days, 42 months, so it's described different ways in different places. The comment was that all works really well, assuming a 360-day year. Now, there are several thoughts about that. I showed you timelines last time of how various people had worked out the timeline. They worked it out for 360-day years, and they worked it out for 365-day years, and they wind up at slightly different places based on how they work it out. I read a preterist on this a couple nights ago, and they think everything ends in 70 AD. Revelation, Daniel, the whole shooting match all ends in 70 AD. I understand their reasoning, and they are not stupid. I don't find it particularly persuasive, but I understand it. I think several people in the congregation tend to be preterists, and that's okay. As I said, we can still do lunch and talk about it. Now, time. Time's going to be a big deal. So there's a couple of opinions, several. As all of you know, I am sure, up until 701 BC, all the calendars that we know of in the world had a 360-day year. You had 12 30-day months, 360 days in a year. Now, that's where we get 360 degrees in a circle and all that kind of stuff. Our version of it came from Babylon. 701 BC, when Hezekiah was sick and God gave him a sign that he was going to have another 15 years, what he did is he backed up the sundial. And that backing up of the sundial caused the year to increase to 365 and a quarter days, and it threw the moon out of sync. So the moon no longer is nice and even 30 days per month. Everything got thrown out of sync. And one of the insights of people who are prophecy buffs, and I am not a prophecy buff, by the way. I read the whole Bible, I believe the whole Bible, but there are people that really, really get into prophecy, and I'm not one of those. But anyway, the prophecy buffs in one camp say, well, wait a minute. God, when he talks about the nations, talks about them in terms of who was in the original place when the world was divided after Noah. So you have Gog and Magog, and these people who are no longer there anymore, but God still refers to those regions of the world by the people group that were stuck there. So that insight is, for the prophecy buffs, well, wait a minute then. Used to be 360-day years. So God is doing prophecy in 360-day years because God didn't change the names of the geographic regions as people change. So he didn't change the years either, so we're talking 360-day years. That's the logic. You can buy it or not as you choose. You know, that doesn't matter to me. I will give you another thought. When I taught Revelation several years ago, there are a whole bunch of massive disruptions that happen on the earth. Mountains get thrown into the sea, islands get shifted out of place, stars fall from heaven, just dramatic stuff. This was not my original idea. I read it in some guy's paper, and I don't remember who it was. The idea that that could all happen naturally, which is not to say that God doesn't arrange it. When God decides to strip your land of all vegetation, he doesn't just wave an arm and go, poof, it's gone. He sends a plague of locusts. He uses natural things to affect his miracles. So the thought was, if you have an Earth-size planet that comes down through the plane of the ecliptic and it passes very close to the Earth, all of the things that are described in the early parts of Revelation, mountains falling into the sea, islands being shifted out of place, all that kind of stuff could easily happen with gravitational tides. The moon going around puts a hump in the ocean. You can imagine what another body the same size as the Earth making a near pass would do. The other part of that course is all large celestial bodies drag behind them a tail of debris, comet tail, for example. And so if we had such a thing where a planet-sized object went through the plane of the ecliptic causing all this mess, if you come around a year later to the same point in your orbit, you will then fly through the debris field, which means massive meteor showers and all sorts of stuff. Now, having said that, the thing that occurs to me is such an event very likely would change the orbit of the Earth slightly. So just as changing the orbit of the Earth resulted in a five-day addition to the calendar, an event like that that could happen in Revelation could put the year back to 360 days. That is all speculation. It is not scripture, but I'm just saying, as you do these times, it is entirely possible to have a mixture of 360 and 365 days, assuming what I just said about Revelation might happen. It's sort of like Joshua's long day, where you have hailstones falling from the sky, killing the Philistines. Now, in order for that to work, God had to have set those hailstones in motion earlier. And as I think it was Chuck Missler used to say, I'm not worried about the miracle, I'm just amazed at his marksmanship. So when you're dealing with God, what I just said is possible. Now, there's a fly in that ointment. And the fly in that particular ointment is, in Revelation, we have something that happens for 1,290 days instead of 1,260. 1,260 is 3.5 years. 1,290 would be 3.5 years plus a month, assuming we're back to 368 years. And what I would speculate there is that includes an Adar Bet, so that would be then 3.5 years plus an Adar Bet. But the problem with that is if everything gets put back to 360 and so forth, you don't need Adar Bet anymore. You begin to understand how hard this is. And as I say, prophecy mavens spend hours and hours and hours on this stuff, trying to get stuff to fit. And I am not a prophecy maven. So let's now back up into Daniel 11. And what I said last time is Daniel 11, up until verse 36, pretty much describes the conflict between the Seleucids and the Ptolemies, which resulted in the Maccabean revolt. From 36 on, it feels more like end times to me. And so I want to read from 36, which we read last time, and then we'll just swoop right into Daniel 12 and continue. Daniel 11:36, "And the king shall do as he wills. He shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak astonishing things against the God of gods. He shall prosper till the indignation is accomplished. For what is decreed shall be done." I don't know who this king is. It's possible that it's one of the Seleucids. It's possible that somebody else. Verse 37, "He shall pay no attention to the God of his fathers or to the one beloved by women." And again, I have no idea what that is. "He shall not pay attention to any other god, for he shall magnify himself above all. He shall honor the god of fortresses instead of these. A god whom his fathers did not know, he shall honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and costly gifts." I have no idea who the god of fortresses is, If this were a Greek or a Roman god, it would be Aries or Mars. But Aries and Mars were not unknown. They were well-established, known gods. Now, before I lose you all this stuff I don't know, one of the things about the book of Daniel, as we'll find out in chapter 12, is the book is sealed, which is to say, the fact that we don't understand it is not anything unusual. Revelation, on the other hand, is open. We're intended to understand Revelation, but Daniel is specifically told to seal up the book and the vision until the time of the end. So the fact that I got no idea what's going on here is probably by design. And you will find prophecy buffs who will read all sorts of stuff in there. Verse 39, he shall deal with the strongest fortresses with the help of a foreign god. Those who acknowledge him he shall load with honor. He shall make them rulers over many and shall divide the land for a price. Again, this could be Antiochus because the Jews were divided between Torah-observant Jews and Hellenized Jews. And one of the things that Antiochus did is he bribed the Hellenized Jews and pitted them against the traditional Jews. So the Hellenized Jews were, in fact, turning in and ratting out their rivals, if you will, within Judaism. So it could be either way. 40. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, but the king of the north shall rush upon him like a whirlwind, with chariots and horsemen, and with many ships. He shall come into countries and shall overflow and pass through. This sounds much bigger than anything Antiochus did. 41. He shall come into the glorious land, and tens of thousands shall fall, but these shall be delivered out of his hand, Edom and Moab, and the main part of the Ammonites. He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall become ruler of the treasuries of gold and silver, and all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Cushites shall follow in his train. That does not sound like Antiochus. But news from the east and the north shall alarm him, and he shall go out with great fury to destroy and devote many to destruction, and he shall pitch his palatial tents between the sea and the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end with none to help him. And I don't know that Antiochus pitched his tents between Mount Zion and the Mediterranean. To me, this all sounds end-timey. It feels like Armageddon kind of stuff. So now at chapter 12, this is still Gabriel talking. At that time shall arise Michael, the great prince who has charge of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as there has never been since there was a nation till that time. This is what's obviously known as the time of Jacob's trouble or the Great Tribulation. I read a preterist on this, by the way, who said Michael is Yeshua. But Michael is described as a great prince of your people. And he is described as an archangel. So I'm not sure where we get that he might also be Yeshua. As I say, these prophecy buffs spend a lot of time on this. At that time shall arise Michael, the great prince, who has charge over your people, and there shall be a time of trouble, such as had never been since there was a nation till that time. But at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone whose name shall be found written in the book. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. Stop there for a moment. If you're a preterist, what you see there is, as the Romans were investing Jerusalem during the Jewish rebellion that was going to result in the destruction of the temple, Christians fled to Pella, which is straight east on the other side of the Jordan River. And they survived, and what the preterist will say is those were Jewish Christians. The early church was mostly entirely Jewish, so what a preterist will say is this describes the flight of the Christian Jews ahead of the Romans So they escaped the destruction of Jerusalem. Put a bookmark there. Let's go to Zechariah 14. Behold, a day is coming for the Lord, when the spoil taken from you will be divided in your midst. For I will gather all the nations against Jerusalem to battle. And the city shall be taken, and the houses plundered, and the women raped. Half of the city shall go out into exile, but the rest of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then the Lord will go out and fight against the nations as when he fights on a day of battle. On that day his feet shall stand on the Mount of Olives that lies before Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives will split in two from east to west by a very wide valley, so that one half of the mount shall move northward and the other half southward. And you shall flee to the valley of my mountains, for the valley of the mountains shall reach to Elzal. And you shall flee as you fled from the earthquake in the day of Uzziah, king of Judah. Then the Lord my God will come and all the holy ones with him. So the idea of the Christians fleeing to the east, which would imply to me fleeing through the mountain that has just split, that didn't happen. And there's a number of things like that that lead me to believe that 70 AD was not all there's going to be. Now, certainly a great many of these events did happen in 70 AD. There's no question about that. But I don't believe that the tracking is exact, which tells me that it's going to happen again. And those are the events of Revelation. So I am back in Daniel 12, pick it up at 2 again. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the sky above, and those who turn many to righteousness, like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. And I see that many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase as a reference to where we are right now. You routinely run off down to Texas, and the amount of knowledge in the world right now is increasing exponentially. And the thing about it is, people are getting a lot stupider, but they have access to all of this knowledge in the palm of their hand. So for those who are not becoming terminally stupid, the amount of information available to you is just skyrocketing. One of the things I said years ago is I used to write software. And with the internet, within about a week or 10 days, if I needed to, I could learn a new computer language. If I had a different problem to solve and the language that I would normally write it in wasn't the right language for it, I'd just learn a new language. Take me a week, 10 days, and you know, I wouldn't be an ace at it, but I could write decent code. You know, when I wrote the software packages for Eric, I learned two new computer languages during that period. I learned to program in SQL, and I learned to program in XSLT. And figured it out, and he's still using that software today. So the idea of knowledge increasing and people running to and fro, that's talking about travel that we have now. 1,000 years ago, it was rare to leave your village, unless you were going to raid the neighboring village, loot them, and all that stuff. But today, we, on a whim, will run a couple states away to see an eclipse. That's why I say this feels beyond 70 AD to me, for reasons like that. So verse 5. Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, two others stood, one on this bank of the stream and one on that bank of the stream. And someone said to the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the stream, how long shall it be till the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the stream, he raised his right hand and his left hand toward heaven and swore by him who lives forever that it would be for a time, times, and half a time. I've got on my chart back here the various incarnations of 3.5 years in Revelation and Daniel. It's described as 42 months in Revelation 11 and 13, and it's time, times, and half a time in Daniel 7, Daniel 12, and Revelation 12. 1260 days in Revelation 11 and Revelation 12. The abomination we'll talk about in just a minute. But this time period shows up both in Daniel and in Revelation and under similar circumstances. So when we get to Revelation 13, for example, it's the first beast. And remember when we started off Daniel a couple weeks ago, or however many weeks ago it was, I said that the beasts are human government. You remember that Nebuchadnezzar had this vision of a magnificent statue which represented all the empires from him to the end. When the stone cut without hands rolls down the mountain and destroys it. So he sees this magnificent statue made out of metals. God gives the same vision, and he sees them as dangerous animals. So the insight there is when we're talking about the beasts in Revelation, we are not necessarily talking about a person, we are talking about a government system. I'm in Revelation. So we have the first beast that comes out, Revelation 13:5. And the beast was given a mouth uttering haughty and blasphemous words, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. 42 months is 3.5 years. It opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling. Does that sound like Daniel 11 that we just read? It does to me. So blasphemy against his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. Also, it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. And authority was given it over every tribe and people and language and nations. And all who dwell on the earth shall worship it, everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who was slain. So this feels very much like what we just read at the end of Daniel 11. So let's pick it up in Daniel 12:7, where the man clothed in linen who was above the water of the stream, how long shall it be till the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the stream. He raised his right hand and his left hand toward heaven and swore by him who lives forever that it will be for a time, times, and half a time, and that when the shattering of the power of the holy people comes to an end, all these things would be finished. That's what is being said in Revelation, that the beast would be given power over the saints for a time, times, and half a time. Now, for those who are preterists, one of the things that I will slightly disagree with them on is Israel has returned and become a nation again. Israel is the most powerful nation in the region. Israel is engaged in a war. They won't say it this way, but it's engaged in a war against all Islam because Islam is the thing that is feeding the Palestinians. So the actual point of combat is Gaza and Lebanon, but that is all being fed by the Muslim world. And Muslims outnumber Jews by a whole bunch. And so the idea that Israel currently could lose a war, and that would then result in the events of Revelation revving up and the beast being destroyed. And again, this is all speculation. I am not a prophecy buff, but as I read these things and look at today, I can see how all these things might be. So the idea of time, times, and half a time, that when the shattering of the power of the holy people comes to an end, all these things would be finished. So if modern Israel is shattered and not able to stand against her enemies, I would read that as that is the thing that is being described in Daniel. Obviously, I don't know when that'll happen. One of the things that Israelites say is God has blessed us with stupid enemies because they always attack before they're ready. They don't ever actually achieve the objectives of their attack. I was reading somewhere that the business on October 7th was actually premature. They didn't have everything in place that they wanted to have in place, and somebody jumped the gun. Don't know if that's true or not, it's something I've read. And I wouldn't be able to tell you anymore where I read it. Verse 8, I heard, but I did not understand. Then I said, Oh my Lord, what shall be the outcome of these things? He said, Go your way, Daniel, for the words are shut up and sealed until the times of the end. Many shall purify themselves and make themselves white and be refined, but the wicked shall act wickedly. And none of the wicked will understand, but those who are wise shall understand. And from the time that the regular burnt offering is taken away and the abomination that makes desolate is set up, there shall be 1290 days. Blessed is he who waits and arrives at 1335 days. I don't know what that is. But go your way till the end, and you shall rest and shall stand in your allotted place at the end of days, which is a promise of resurrection and eternal life. So the idea here of the abomination of desolation, that is also on this slide here, and shows up obviously in Daniel 11:31 and Daniel 12:11 that just read. It shows up Matthew 24:15. When you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. And preterist would say that happened in 70 AD because it did happen in 70 AD. They are right, it happened in 70 AD. But what I am trying to get across as my understanding is there's some stuff in Daniel and Revelation that did not happen in 70 AD and is yet to happen. The other part of that, by the way, is in order for the abomination of desolation to happen, the temple will have to be rebuilt. And you all have been around long enough that you are aware of the Temple Institute, and they have been busy bees making all of the accoutrements and trappings needed for the third temple. And every Pesach, they have a cornerstone cut for the third temple. And they parade it around Jerusalem with the idea that they want to take it up on the mountain and set it in place as the formal beginning of the construction of the third temple. Speculation again now. Obviously, I don't know what's going to happen with this war that they're in, neither does anybody else. But the pattern with wars between Israel and the Palestinians or the Arabs is the Arabs strike prematurely, Israel goes in there and kicks tail, and the Palestinians say, oh, genocide, oh, stop, stop. That's the normal pattern of these things. Israel's not stopping. Everybody in the world is trying to get Israel to stop right now. They're not. So one of the possible outcomes of all of this is them, for example, taking back the Temple Mount. If they did that, that's going to be really interesting. Because what they'll do if they do that is they'll throw up a temple and they'll start sacrifice. And the events in Revelation will kick off. And I suspect there will be some kind of a treaty set up for joint use of the Temple Mount or something like that. Everybody thought Oslo was going to be the treaty, but it turned out not to be. So I can see the events of Revelation getting kicked off by this current war, because Israel is not acting typically as they have in the past. That is entirely speculation. That is not based on any inside information or visions from God or anything else. It's just entirely speculation. Things appear different right now.